We're happy for the presence of all this morning, especially for those who are visiting with us. We have a good number of visitors here this morning, and we so much appreciate your being with us today. For some time, we've been preaching from Mark's Gospel, and we'll be back there this morning. We'll be in the latter part of Mark chapter 14 in our lesson this morning. We left off our study last time with Jesus being arrested and bound in the Garden of Gethsemane and taken away by a coalition force of the Jewish Sanhedrin, the temple police, and Roman soldiers. So let's read now verse 53 of Mark chapter 14, verse 53, beginning on down through verse 65. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes. But Peter followed them at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. And he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. Now the chief priests and all the council sought testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. For many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. Then some rose up and bore false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another one made without hands.' But not even then did their testimony agree. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, 'Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you?' But he kept silent and answered nothing. Again the high priest asked him, saying to him, 'Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?' Jesus said, 'I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven.' Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, 'What further need do we have of witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?' And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. Then someone began to spit on him and to blindfold him and to beat him and say to him, 'Prophesy.' And the officers struck him with the palms of their hands." The time has finally come for Jesus to stand before his accusers, and he will face now a Jewish trial with three phases to it, each of which will violate all principles of justice and also break their own laws for trials. Then there will be a Gentile trial by the Romans with three phases to it, and it will be equally unjust. Six different times Jesus will stand before a judge or judges in a period of less than 5 hours. All the phases of these trials were accelerated in the few hours of darkness, ending just after dawn on Friday morning, leaving time then for the mockery, the scourging, and the crucifixion by 9 a.m. Mark 15, verse 25 says he was crucified at 9 a.m. The Jewish leaders have long been waiting for this moment where they could finally be rid of this extremist who has challenged their authority. They plotted for this, they planned for this, and finally succeeded by using one of his own to betray him. Judas' proposal has given them the opportunity to be free of him at last. They have him in custody. And now they must come up with some charges to present to the Romans so that he will be executed. Mark, along with Matthew, gives us a record of his main trial before the Sanhedrin. It took place in the house of Caiaphas. And it's this trial that we just read about from Mark, and we'll talk about it in a moment or two. But something else took place before this. Before Jesus was led away to Caiaphas, as we have just read in Mark's account, we have to leave Mark now and go to John the 18th chapter to see what happened before the trial at Caiaphas' house. In John 18, you actually have the first phase of the Lord's trial before the Jews, and that is the arraignment It took place at Anna's house. And so let's read about it, John 18, verses 12 and 13. I have it on the screen for you also. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first. Get that? They led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. So Jesus is first led to Annas. He was technically not the high priest, but in effect he was the power behind the Sanhedrin. We do not know much about Annas from the scriptures. But exterior sources tell us that about 20 years earlier, he had served as high priest for 5 or 6 years. The Romans, for reasons that we do not know, had deposed him from the office. But after losing his position, Annas was shrewd enough to have had 5 of his sons serve in succession as high priest. And now his son-in-law, Caiaphas, is the high priest. And when we read John's account here of them bringing Jesus to Annas first, it's obvious that the temple police must have held Annas in high regard. He was not officially the high priest, but the people still viewed him as such. So when this mob returned from the garden to the city with Jesus in custody, they went first to Annas, not to Caiaphas. The inference being that they viewed Annas more as the actual high priest than the one currently occupying the position. Annas was a person of enormous power and influence. It's important to understand that because when we come to verse 19 in John's account, he refers to Annas as the high priest. Verse 19 says that the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. So John calls him the high priest here in the way that journalists in our time often refer to former presidents and governors without using the word former. So the Lord has been brought to Annas for arraignment. He's going to question Jesus, trying to gather further evidence that can later be presented at a formal hearing before the Sanhedrin Council. We have nothing definitive about where Annas' house was in the city, nor what it was like. But the image I have on the screen is a model of a house that was excavated from the ruins of first century Jerusalem. And some believe that it may have belonged to Annas. If so, Jesus was likely questioned in one of the side rooms or maybe in the corner of the courtyard. Notice in John's account, verse 19, that Annas questioned Jesus about 2 things, about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus is at the house of Annas, but there are other things going on at the same time. One is that the Sanhedrin is coming together at the house of the technically ruling high priest, Caiaphas. And that's where Jesus will go next. Caiaphas' house was a palace which had guards, barracks, and prison cells. It was a much larger structure than the house of Annas. This is a modern reconstruction of what Caiaphas' palace was like. And so while Jesus was over in Annas' courtyard, the members of the Sanhedrin are at Caiaphas' palace, hurriedly trying to find someone to commit perjury against Jesus and do it before the fully assembled council. There's also something else going on while Jesus is before Annas. We learn this from John. Peter, along with the other disciples, you remember, had earlier fled the garden when Jesus was arrested. But John tells us, verse 15, that Peter had retraced his steps and then followed along with the multitude which was taking Jesus to Annas' house. And Peter was able to enter Annas' courtyard by the help of another disciple who was known to Annas. It's generally thought that this other disciple was the Apostle John, who wrote the gospel that records this. And this is where Peter made his first denial of Jesus, verse 17. So you have several scenes occurring simultaneously. Annas is questioning Jesus at his house, verse 19. He's trying to come up with an indictment. We got to find a crime here if we're going to have an execution. And so he begins the questioning Jesus by asking him about his disciples and his teaching. Now that was illegal. This would be self-incrimination. He's asking Jesus to admit something for which he can be executed. Tell me about your disciples, your teaching. Give me something I can indict you for. And Jesus' response to his question, verse 20, were calm and dignified, but noncommittal. Essentially, the Lord says, I spoke nothing in secret. I taught in places where the Jews come together. Why do you question me? Ask those who heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said. It may be that Jesus was saying by this, this is all illegal. Where are any witnesses to a crime, any crime? Verse 21, why do you ask me? Question those who've heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said. Annas was a lot like a mafia boss who saw Jesus as a threat to his financial empire. He was essentially ready to be done with Jesus, especially ready to be done with Jesus, I should say. He was already angry with Jesus for casting the money changers out of the temple a few days before, the booths where they sold animals for sacrifices and exchanged money at a profit were known in that day to the people as Annas' bazaars. Some of the devout Jews were disgusted by his temple corruption. And when Jesus said, why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said. Annas didn't like that. Verse 22 of John 18 says that when Jesus said that, one of the temple policemen struck Jesus with the palm of his hand. Is that the way you answer the high priest? And Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. I think the newer translations are better here. They say, if I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you hit me? Annas was frustrated. He couldn't really form a clear arraignment against Jesus. And even if he crafted some accusation against Jesus, it wouldn't be valid to the Roman authorities. If Jesus was to be sentenced to death by Pilate, as seems to have been the plan, a legal accusation would actually have to be made by the duly recognized high priest, the one who was essentially chairman of the Sanhedrin, and that was Caiaphas. And further, as we said, their own legal procedure did not permit an accused person's testimony to be used against himself. So Annas was stymied. And thus the next part of the story would unfold. Jesus would go before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. Notice what verse 24 says. Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Well, that takes us back to Mark's account in which he describes now Jesus' appearance before Caiaphas, verse 53. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes. Remember now, while Jesus and the soldiers were at the home of Annas, the Sanhedrin was being gathered, and they've convened at Caiaphas' palace. This is going to be the main religious trial of Jesus. And it will be a sham. First, they've already decided that he's to be put to death. The whole indictment attempt is illegal. They have no crime. They have no witnesses. It's in the middle of the night, which was not legal. It isn't in a court. There are no duly appointed judges, no prosecutors, and certainly no defenders. They just want Jesus dead, and they're trying to figure out how to do it. They're in a rush to get this done before the light of day, when people may begin to take notice. We already read earlier in Mark that the leaders were afraid to take Jesus in the midst of the Passover feast, but they have done it because Judas provided them the opportunity. The entire Sanhedrin now has gathered out of the darkness and come to Caiaphas' house. That's a gross breach of protocol. Authorities of the time tell us that the Sanhedrin was required to meet in the Hall of Judgment, which was located in the temple complex. And beyond that, they were to meet in the daylight hours, and the trial was to be public. But before we go to the actual sham trial in the house of Caiaphas, Mark's going to give us now a little glimpse of Peter in verse 54. But Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. And he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. The newer translations say he sat with the officers, the guards, the temple police. And so Peter has followed Jesus from the house of Annas now to the house of Caiaphas. For the moment, Mark only locates Peter for us. He's in the courtyard of the official high priest. We'll get to Peter's actions in more detail in our next lesson. Typically, a large house in which someone like Caiaphas would live would be rectangular or square, built with its four sides surrounding a center courtyard. Jesus is likely in a large room of Caiaphas' palace, his house. Peter, outside in the courtyard, near a fire with the guards, the temple police, who brought him here. We've had an attempt at a legal arraignment at Anna's house, and that's going to be followed here by a series of illegal testimony. Listen to verse 55. Now the chief priest and all the council sought testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Remember, these rulers had already determined the outcome. It's going to be the sentence of death. The sentence had already been determined. They just needed to find a crime. And to do that, they needed testimony, someone to testify to a crime that was committed. Matthew, over in his account, explains the council's effort by saying, Matthew 26 and verse 59, they were seeking false testimony. They were seeking it. Imagine going around looking for people in the middle of the night. This is the middle of the night. And I would point out that when Mark says in verse 55 that the council sought testimony against Jesus but found none, he means that they found no such testimony. They did find witnesses. What kind? Verse 56 says, for many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. These were the first witnesses against Jesus. Mark says there were many who did so. The word testimonies in the Greek there is plural. But because their evidence was not true, was not factual, since it was all false, their statements were not the same. In the Greek, the term translated did not agree, verse 56, means their testimony was not equal, it was not alike. Well, after these first witnesses, the many of verse 56 could not agree, Mark says in verse 57 that some other men then rose up to bear false witness against him. Matthew says about this in his account, but at last two false witnesses came forward, Matthew 26 and verse 60. We'll see in the next verse that these men loosely quoted something Jesus had said, if they were speaking of the occasion 3 years before in his visit to Jerusalem. Many of you will remember, I'm sure, that in John chapter 2, verse 19, when Jesus drove out the money changers from the temple grounds the first time, he did it two times, beginning of his ministry, the end of his ministry. When he did that the first time, the Jews asked him to give them a sign as to who he was. And he answered them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. They took Jesus to be speaking of the temple in Jerusalem. But John hastens to tell us there that he was speaking of the temple of his body, his resurrection. Mark makes it clear here in verse 57 that this is false testimony being stated by these men, because they have taken what Jesus said out of context. They have applied what he said to the Jewish temple. And so notice the false nature of what these men say. Here's what they say, verse 58. We heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. Now that is not what Jesus said in John 2 and verse 19. If you look at what Jesus said there, he said only, destroy this temple. He did not say, I will destroy this temple. And second, he did not say, I will destroy this temple made with hands. He wasn't speaking of a temple made with hands. He was speaking of his body. And thirdly, notice what else these men said, verse 58, and that he said, they say that he said, within 3 days I will build another made without hands. Jesus did not say anything about build another made without hands. He just said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. These subtle differences in the two men's testimony completely changed the meaning of Jesus' statement. And the false witnesses knew this. They portrayed Jesus as planning to destroy the temple in Jerusalem. But this is far from the meaning of his words. Jesus was talking about his body, that 3 days after he would be killed, he would arise from the grave. And so by cunningly rephrasing what Jesus had said, the false witnesses were able to bring an indictment against Jesus. But it's a false indictment. And by the way, no one was seeking witnesses in defense of Jesus. That's another illegality. They didn't want anyone who would defend Jesus. They wanted him dead in a few hours. This is not a trial, it's a conspiracy. An illegal arraignment, an illegal trial, and illegal testimony. But what we find in verse 60 is also illegal. It is an illegal interrogation. They're getting frustrated now. Their first effort at finding witnesses collapsed. They have found two who give false testimony, but look at verse 59. I'll back it up for you there. It says, but not even then did their testimony agree. The high priest Caiaphas knows that he has a weak case. In fact, the case is falling apart. And so at verse 60, Caiaphas takes it upon himself to save the proceedings. He stands up, comes forward, and questions Jesus. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? He asked these two questions in succession, I think, hoping to elicit a reply. The second one invites a comment or an explanation that Jesus would give of the charges that the two men had made. But it brought no response from the Lord. Jesus really had no reason to speak. The Jewish leaders are trying to find someone who could make charges against him stick. Matthew and Mark tell us that the leaders found people to lie for them, but their testimony was inconsistent. You may have heard the old saying, if someone is trying to prove themselves a fool, get out of the way. Jesus had no reason to speak at all in this farcical trial. To do so would have only given maybe legitimacy to what was going on. You remember Isaiah's prophecy of the Messiah in Isaiah 53 and verse 7? He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. Jesus had no obligation to make sense out of their lies. And so he answers them with a deafening silence. We'll read later in the Roman trials, Luke 23, that Jesus was silent before Herod. And in John 19, that he was silent before Pilate. So now the high priest must ratchet it up. He stood up in the midst of the assembly. He's received no answer from Jesus to explain or deny the false charges of the two men. And now Caiaphas asked Jesus directly a very substantial question, verse 61. Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? L.A. Stopher in his commentary states correctly, I believe, that that question combined two issues. Are you the Christ asked whether Jesus claimed that he is the fulfillment of all Old Testament prophecy that looks to a coming Messiah? Well, of course, Jesus affirmed that in his teaching in the synagogues. The second part of that, the expression, the Son of the Blessed, probably indicated the reluctance of the high priest in particular and Jews in general to utter the name of God. That term, blessed, when applied to someone, is used in the New Testament exclusively of God. And further, Matthew, in his account of Jesus before the council, has Caiaphas saying before the question, I adjure you, or I put you under oath to tell us whether you are the Christ. He wants Jesus to state this under oath. He's hoping to badger Jesus into a blasphemous claim. But now, this was the first legitimate question of any of the proceedings. This is not the question, what did you do? Someone says you did so and so, what do you say? This is the question, who are you? Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? Jesus knows the intent of the question, but he answers it anyway. And the Lord did not hesitate in his response to this question. He answered with a firm yes. Matthew has Jesus responding, you have said, or you have said correctly, implied. And Mark here has him say, I am, both of which are included in Luke, who records saying, you rightly say that I am. Jesus not only answers this question, he enlarges upon it, because he now applies to himself two well-known Old Testament prophecies known to these Jewish leaders. After saying, I am, in verse 62, Jesus adds this, and you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power. That's an allusion to Psalm 110, verses 1 and 2, where the Messiah is going to be raised to the right hand of God and will rule with a rod of iron. And then he goes on to say to the council, verse 62, that he will come with the clouds of heaven. That's a term taken out of Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14, prophesying the Messiah. They all knew those scriptures. They knew Psalm 110 and they knew Daniel 7 like the back of their hand. What Jesus is saying is, yes, I am the Christ, and my death will not be the end. I will return in glory as judge over all the earth. Verse 63, then the high priest tore his clothes and said, what further need do we have of witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. Caiaphas charges Jesus with claiming to be divine, that he, only a man, had assumed a role that belongs only to God. And then Caiaphas called for the opinion of the Sanhedrin, asked for their verdict, and it was immediate. They condemned him as an offender who must suffer the sentence of death based on the penalty that Moses gave for blasphemy in Leviticus chapter 24 and verse 16. Now, of course, the fact is that they, the entire Sanhedrin, were the blasphemers. They vilified and disdained the very Messiah whom God had promised them and sent to them. Verse 65 tells us that then some of the Sanhedrin, apparently, began to spit on him and now began to crudely mock his claim to be the Messiah. They blindfolded him and beat him. In the middle of the verse, the soldiers followed the lead of their esteemed leaders by slapping Jesus. Matthew says they taunted him since he was blindfolded and he couldn't see by saying to him, prophesy to us, Christ, who is the one that struck you? This was the second phase of Jesus' trial by the Jews. The third phase is recorded only in Luke's account. At the end of chapter 22, you might want to read it when you go home. And it will be nothing more than a show trial that is held as soon as day breaks in some kind of a lame attempt to legitimize the illegal proceedings that have taken place in the night in violation of their own law. They will meet in the morning in this third phase of that. From a judicial perspective, the trial of Jesus is one of the most horrific perversions of justice to ever take place. It's one thing to engineer and manipulate facts in order to get a desirable outcome, but it's something entirely different to fabricate testimony, especially in a capital trial. But as we see, through it all, Jesus remained firm in his determination to carry out the Father's plan. Without his willingness to do that, you and I would be without any hope whatsoever. May our praise ever be to God and His Son for their great desire to save mankind from our sins. In our next lesson, we'll take up the details of Peter while Jesus was before the Sanhedrin, and then we'll be looking together at the Roman trial later. It's easy to see the villainy of the religious leaders who rejected Christ. But my friend, do you understand that if you reject Christ by not ever coming to Him in penitence for your sins, you will spend eternity in the same place they have gone. Hell has been prepared for all sinners who will not receive Jesus Christ. And that includes even moral people, because our own morality will not save us. Heaven is for people who know that they're sinners and admit it and come to Christ alone for salvation, repenting of sin, confessing Him as Christ, and being baptized for the remission of sin. If you've never done that, why not do it today as we stand and sing our song?